Hello, cyclocross friends, and welcome to episode 95 of Crosshairs Radio. Today's show is another They Don't Do That in Europe, so I will be joined by Mr. David Palin and Scott Diedenbach momentarily. We got a great show for you today. We're talking all about the Pan Am Championships and then also the Euro Championships and everything else in there. Really early start for this one, 6:30 in the a.m. record time, so Had some coffee, and it was a perky, upbeat show. So we will get to that, as I said, in a second. Before we do that, Health IQ. You knew it was coming, but don't fast forward. Just listen to me. I'm going to make it really, really short, but I really, really need you to follow through on this. Go to healthiq.com/CXHairs and learn more about the Health IQ advantage for getting life insurance. And that advantage speaks directly to you because the advantage is that they use a mortality model. Those are not really big words, but when you put them together, it's a big concept. A mortality model on health conscious, and that is able to lead to lower rates for health conscious people. I've said this before, it's like when you get your car insurance and they see that you don't have any tickets or any accidents and they say, hey, you are a good driver, we're going to give you a lower rate. This is what Health IQ does. They say, hey, you ride your bike 50 miles a week, or you work out, or you run, you have a low resting heart rate, you are a health conscious person. Much like a good driver, we're going to reward this by lower rates. And they're able to reward it not because they're just an awesome company, which they are, but because they know that you're a better risk for them. So since you're a better risk, they will lower your rates to get you as a client and to have you sign up for life insurance. Life insurance, not just for you, but for the people in your lives. And something that every estate planner is going to say, hey, let's look at your life insurance. And you say, I don't have any. And they're going, go to healthiq.com/CXHairs. That's what I imagine they say to you. And then you go and do it. You take a little quiz. You qualify. You talk to them. You sign up. You help them support us. You support us. You keep the show going. Everybody's happy. Let's talk about shows. You're listening to Crosshairs Radio. Thank you so much for doing so. If you like what you hear, if you like all of our They Don't Do That in Europe, tell a friend. It's cyclocross season. We need to get everybody back on board. There's still a lot of you listening, but we want more. We are just greedy as all, and we want all of the listeners. So go on Facebook, go on Twitter, tell them you're listening to Crosshairs Radio and spread the word. Tell them you're listening to all of the shows on the Wide Angle Podium Podcast Network. That's what Crosshairs Radio is part of, and that's what we want you to be part of. David and Scott, who are on this show coming up, also do their own show. It's called Bike Shop CX. You should check that one out. If you have any interest in cyclocross, you're going to love them. It goes without saying, then it's been said before, the click and clack of cyclocross. You're going to get all of your tips in an entertaining way. You can write them letters. You can, and they will answer them. And it's an awesome show. So what we need you to do is not only tune into that, but to support that show. Support Bike Shop CX. Support the Consummate Athlete. Support the Slow Ride Podcast. And do that at wideanglepodium.com. There is a donate button there. You can donate at all different levels. Also look now on that tab. There is a store button. Click on the store button on the tab at the top, and you will see all of the awesome shirts we have for sale. We also have a sweet kit that we're doing, a cycling kit. Go pre-order your kit, pre-order your t-shirts. T-shirt proceeds go to help out animals. We love animals, and those are going to different shelters around the world, especially those that have been affected by disasters. Okay. I said I wasn't going to talk that long. It's already been 4:38. So let's get to it. Hey, check out Crosshairs Television on my YouTube station. It's youtube.com/CXHairs. That's the only other thing I ask of you. All right, turn it over to Scott Diedenbach. We're going to do TDDTIE, and we're going to do that right now.
Okay, we're back for another edition of TDDTIE. They don't do that in Europe. With me on the right, Bill Shiken. Bill, what's Shiken? I don't know why I said that's the dumbest thing. It's like, remember when we were trying to name the show and someone said you should name it Hey Bill, What's Shiken?
You know, in the 70s when Shake and Bake was like the up and coming product.
You were playing basketball at the time, right?
Yeah. I didn't have those moves, though. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, with the first name of Scott, you can believe all the Star Trek jokes I've heard all my life. Scotty.
I know we haven't introduced our other member yet, but I will say that my I didn't have it worse than my family because my sister is Shira, Shira, which is a more common name now, but she, you know, was born in the late 70s in the heyday of He-Man, so she probably had it worse.
Also, of course, with us, Mr. David Palin.
You know, growing up with the name Mr. was never easy. Because then there was Mr., right? And they expected me to be like the third Mr. and sing along and stuff.
Mr. Blue Sky. Yeah. I don't know.
There you go.
So, guys, have you recovered from the Pan American Continental Championships that we were all at?
Maybe. Yes? Working on it. I'm still not done. I'm still like going through the hard drive, editing.
Oh yeah,
posting.
Still having to review videos there.
Yeah.
Well, in a way, I'm not done. I'm still cleaning mud out of the van. So
there you go.
It's kind of similar.
Yeah, it is. It's extremely similar. We should mention too that this is like what time is it? 6:30 start for this podcast?
Yeah, 6:30 start time.
Because of the time change, it was important to get done early.
Yeah. We got like drive time radio for you guys if you're listening live, which you're not.
This is my time. You guys like to do the late shows. I like to do the early ones. So we finally got to do one on my timeline.
This is something I was thinking about. If you say, you know, like after nighttime in the show and then you call it like after dark, right? Yeah. Isn't that like, you know, like Crosshairs Radio After Dark or something like that? Isn't it actually dark then? I mean, it's not after dark. After dark would be now when the sun's coming up.
After dark would mean it's light. Yeah. Yeah. True.
Good point.
So confused. Wow.
Bill, see why we should do it later in the day, Scotty D?
Otherwise, these are early
morning. This is early morning, Bill.
He waxes philosophic early in the morning.
All right. Well, do we want to start with European stuff or do we want to start with the Pan Ams? We usually do American stuff first, so let's start with Pan Ams.
Good. That sounds good.
All right, Pan American Championships.
Hey, wait, before we do that, David, did you hear the new Skype ring?
Yes.
It has drums in it. It's like all jazzy. They funked it up.
It must be different if you are the caller rather than if you are the callee, because I didn't notice.
Because you guys upgraded, right? You have a whole new
example. Yeah. Give us a sound bite, Bill. How did it go?
I'll drop one in. I'm not going to drop one in. All right. Sorry. Let's go back to
put it in post.
Yeah.
All right, so we were at Louisville, Pan Am Championships in Louisville this year. A lot of questions going into the race about the venue. Not going to be at Eva Bannman. It was a pre-run for where the U.S. Nationals is supposedly going to be in Louisville in December of next year. With
supposedly going to be, you said, Scotty D. You have something that we don't know?
Well, until it happens, I'm going to say supposedly.
The River Rising or something?
I guess the fear was that Eva Bannman floods a lot in December, and so maybe we should have it somewhere else. And so if we're going to have it somewhere else, let's do a dry run. And so that's why Pan Am Championships were here this weekend. We were there. What did you guys think of the setup and at the new park? I forget the name of it. What was the name of it?
Joe Creason.
Do you guys remember?
Joe Creason,
yes, across.
I will say that I appreciate our priorities. That if you look at the list of hierarchy of races in the UCI stable, it is World Championship, regional championship, continental championship, national championship. We're using our, that the second biggest race you can have as our test race for national.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, he did. That is true.
But I think it was more that it was earlier in the season. You didn't have to worry too much about the flooding aspect.
Well, we were talking about this. Pan Am Championship still doesn't carry the weight, say, of the just even, you know, like the U.S. National Championship.
Oh, not even close.
Right?
I mean, not even close.
Yeah, not even close. And I think
that's why they set it on a very heavy course this year.
Because honestly, we get it's mostly the U.S. and Canadian championship right now. We are getting some riders from other parts of, you know, South America, et cetera. But it's only one or two, you know, it's only a couple. But and hopefully that will grow. I mean, I hope it's a, I want this to be an awesome thing. You know, the Continental Championship. I want it to be a big deal. And I think, you know, when we get some South American riders that come up and start, you know, getting on the podium, maybe winning, then it'll really have arrived and it'll really be a, you know, a big rivalry between everyone in the Pan Am area. So I think it's still growing, but it's not quite there yet. So, but it's for a jersey. So it is important.
It is. And I don't think we're alone. I think that the European scene is sort of the same way and sort of because of the same reason, you know, I mean, U.S., not necessarily the fastest riders, but we definitely have the biggest scene in the Pan Am region.
Right.
Same, Belgium is the same. So all the Belgians and Dutch, like, went to Boer for the weekend and just had their normal race there instead. You know, the European championships don't seem any more special. I'm sure that given the, if you were to pull the top Belgian or even an up-and-coming Belgian racer and you said what is higher on your list of goals, what is your dream to one day be Belgian champion or one day be European champion, I don't know for sure. I would guess that they most would say Belgian champion.
I would completely agree. Yes. Yeah. So, all right. Well, where do we want to start? What race? Well, let's keep talking about the venue. Did we want to? We got a voicemail. Do we want to put that in right here, Bill?
Yeah, I will.
They kind of ask us about the venue.
Paul from Oklahoma left a voicemail at 405 CX Hairs, and thank you, Paul, for calling in. And we'll play it. We'll play it right here and talk about it when it's done.
Hey guys, this is Paul from Oklahoma. Hey Bill, I saw you walking around this weekend at the Derby City Cup, so I assume you guys will probably be talking about that race, obviously in the Pan Am Championships and all, and the venue for Cross Nationals. So speaking of Cross Nationals, is that the new thing now, is that we got to have controversy about parking and paying for parking and stuff like that? I know it's kind of a bummer deal that you had to pay $15 a day to park at the zoo. Parking lot across the street. There was that cheaper parking spot down at the bottom of the hill, which I didn't think was all that great of a spot anyway. But if you were going to the zoo, you only had to pay $5. But if you're going to the race, across the street, you had to pay $15. So anyway, I don't know if you guys are going to talk about that. You guys maybe had VIP treatment as far as parking. The rest of us had to pay the $30 for the weekend. And as far as the course itself, what did you guys thought? What did you think about it? For us in this part of the world, around the Oklahoma, Texas area, Louisville has always been a place that we've kind of gone to for one of our big races of the year. And so the Eva Bannon Park has always been a favorite venue of ours. So it's kind of hard to get excited about the new course when across town is a really excellent cross course. It's really fun to ride. It seemed like this course is pretty heavy on hills. Obviously, the weather was good. The mud was good. The venue organization was good. Anyway, this is what you guys thought. I think I've talked my wife into having a baby really, really quick. That way when we go next year for nationals, we'll at least have a toddler with us or a four-month-old. So we kind of like pretend like we're going to the zoo and maybe we don't have to pay $5. Anyway, thanks for the show. Always listening. Talk to you guys later. Bye.
Okay. That was Paul coming at you pretty hard in that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, thanks, Paul.
What do we think about what some of what Paul said there? I agree with a lot of what Paul said right there.
You going to have kids?
That was a good ending. That was a nice way to bring that one home.
Yeah.
I think, you know, they did a lot of, let me just start like this. They did a lot of stuff right at this venue, right? Okay. The pit was amazing. It was basically a World Cup pit, right? For the mechanics. Great job.
Yeah, I have, I wanted to send you, cause I have an aerial shot of the pit that I just wanted a screen cap cause I thought it looked great. So I need to post that somewhere. I'll post that after we get this up.
Short of having the lane numbers that the World Cups have to have, it was basically a World Cup pit. Brand new hydrants, you know, three hydrants with huge amounts of water flow that could run two power washers each, no problem. Wonderful. The only issue.
Port-a-John at pits.
Yeah, but there is also competition related issue with the pit that I think you were going to mention now.
To get into the pit, you had to walk through the power washers. Oh. So here you are with your clean bike, you know, perfectly clean, shiny bike, and you're walking through this spray that's going all over you. And you know, people were finding like different weird ways to get into the pit so they didn't have to walk through the power wash. So, but that's easily fixable. They could easily just make some kind of path from some other angle and you can get in the pit. So what were you going to say, Bill?
Well, I was saying the power washer placement also, I never went to the race, but from what I was led to understand, reminiscent of the issue at Kings where spill off from the power washers was accumulating on the course. So you had power washers to get mud off. That mud was created by the power washers that were flowing onto the course for Sunday. Saturday, muddier race. Sunday,
that you then
really
had to. That you then had to go to the power washers to clean off to create a bigger mud. It was just this. Right. And so, that's an issue. Maybe they could figure out a
if
better
you if you watched my recap video on Crosshairs Television, I
have not yet
referred to that as the Cobra effect. That's what economists would call it.
Wow.
That's a cobra eating his own tail or something like
that? No, it came from India where they had a rat issue. So they brought in the cobras
on the streets.
Yeah, to take care of the rats, and then you can imagine what happened.
See what you learn on this show? Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah.
So anyways, that's an issue. But the far bigger issue is the zoo parking. I think there's some big problems there.
Can't have a national or continental championship without a parking controversy.
Yeah. Well, since our caller brought it up, it's the only reason I'm talking about it, but it was $15 a day, so you end up dropping $30. That's not even the big issue for me. Is just there you drop $30 for zero services, right? Nothing. There's nothing over there. You're a quarter mile from a Port-a-John, easily.
And you weren't even allowed to put up a tent.
No tent, and you had to deal with the parking czars, right? That were walking around yelling at people. So. You know, that's not good.
And those
that's
weren't not, volunteers. People aren't gonna go those home. Were like zoo employees, right? Like the zoo parking people.
People aren't going to go home and say, oh, man, I had a great time in Louisville at the CX race. Right. When that's what they were dealing with. And that's where we need to get to. And so I don't know how you're going to do nationals in December and say no tents. And there's going to be people out there yelling at you if you put up a tent. Some people did get tents up and at the right time and didn't get yelled at, I guess. But a lot did, you know. We're over there, supporting Crystal Anthony and, you know, Mark Legg and Katie are a one row away from us. So, you got 2/3 of the elite women's podium over there. It's not like this is, parking for whoever, just any, you know, spectators or whatever. This is parking that has to be used by riders. Not everyone can drop $400 on team parking. Right. So they're paying $30 to just be over there. And it was really bad. It was really bad. So I think it's something they really got to fix before nationals.
Although true to our show, Mark Legg did mention that this is how they do it in Europe.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's true.
I said the same thing to him. It's like kind of reminiscent of Europe. You know, you got to know the parking guy.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I know there's a lot of times when in Europe where you got to park far away on the side of the road, et cetera, but you probably didn't pay $30 to park there, right?
Yeah. I think the thing that doesn't really flywell that Paul brought up is that I understand, you know, we even had local races just because it's park regulation where you have to charge for parking. You know, it's just something you have to do. I know there are races out there that charge for parking. So it's not, you know, having to pay something for parking. I'm like, okay, fine, whatever. It's the normally in that lot, parking is $5, but you have this captive audience. So all of a sudden you're going to bump it up to $15. That seems to ring a little
rub
flat.
People.
That's the thing.
Surge
that I think is
pricing, right?
Yeah, exactly. And then the $5 lot really was, I mean, that was a hike. Yeah, that
was a hike. Yeah.
That's
well, and then to me, as bigger, a bigger issue is you got guys walking around the lot yelling at people.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. Just can't do that. Yeah. You can't do that. And I don't care that they were, you know, the race would say, I'm sure, well, that was the zoo employees. I don't care. That should be handled way ahead of time.
Yeah.
You know, so you got people paying $30 for the weekend to have someone yell at them if they step out of line. That's just crazy.
Point, Scotty D, I think that it's incumbent upon the race that it's not a surprise to the zoo day of.
Absolutely.
So expectations need to be set well in advance.
Completely agree. So, all right. Well, what else? What do you guys think about the course?
Let's stay with that. I think the big thing, if people don't know that, you know, we all have a place in our heart for Louisville and cyclocross. It was the world champion 2012. Yeah. World championship. Mm-hmm. I knew that I was going to get that wrong. 2012, 2013 season. You know, watching Sven win a world championship, watching Mariana Voss win a world championship, you know, in epic conditions at Eva Bannman always priding the people who built that course, priding themselves on the fact that was a permanent cyclocross park. You know, that flyover, you could basically put walls on it and live inside of it. It is a permanent structure. You know, the one downfall of that location is that it floods, and that's what we saw also in 2013. I think it actually is why that is one of the most memorable world championships out there, because we had to condense it all to one day, which, you know, for us in America really wasn't a big deal. Oh my gosh, we're gonna have four races on one day when normally we're used to having nine. So
yep.
not really a huge, we're like, yeah, this is, we still got like 2 hours between each race. It doesn't seem like it's that big of a deal. But I think that's what USA Cycling was looking at and organizers were looking at. They don't want to run into that again. So Joe Creason was in fact the alternate location in 2013. You know, if mm-hmm. they for whatever reason couldn't race at Eva Bannman, they would have moved over there. I know the question coming to everybody's mind right now is, well, why didn't they do that if it was flooded? They couldn't do that in 24 hours. You know, that was, they would have had to, if something had happened months before, then they could have moved to that other venue. But the infrastructure to set up, especially for a world championship, just wasn't happening. So
not overnight. Yeah.
Yeah. So this venue always existed. They always knew that this was here. They liked the topography of the park is really good. You know, Paul talked about it a little bit with the climbing heavy. You know, that's either, you know, you can take or leave that. I think some people love it, some people don't love it. I think as far as the course itself goes, I think I didn't hear much negative. I think people really liked the course. It was a challenging course. It was a championship course. We can talk about the layout of the course, and I think some changes need to be made.
Mm-hmm. And I'll say one thing about the course now, and it could be because it was so heavy, but the one negative that I did hear from a few people is the length of the course.
Yeah.
The length led to very long lap times, even at the more elite levels, which in turn meant that you had very strung out racing. And for the lower levels, even though in the tech guide it said that no racers would be pulled in the USAC races, just to keep things on schedule, they ended up pulling races.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I was sort of alluding to, and I think, Scott, you can talk about this too. Anybody who's ever set up a cyclocross race, when you looked at that, and I understand it's a road and you're like, oh, look at this long straight road. If you looked at the start finish stretch,
It was a head scratcher. It was nowhere near the rest of the course. And it was, I mean, poor Scott Herman and Dave Toll were staring at trees that, you know, unless they were announcing on what the squirrels were doing, they saw nothing. They saw zero part of the race because the finishing stretch was nowhere near the rest of the course.
Yeah, you could see about 80, maybe 80 to 100 yards of the course from where they were, and that's it.
Yeah,
you
know, just them coming down the stretch.
Very difficult. Yeah, making it
and
very difficult.
Just the final piece of that stretch as well. I mean, they were coming out of the woods before they came up onto that tarmac to head north or head up for the finishing run. It was, I agree with you guys.
You know, being the professional he is, you could see Scott Herman, he would actually be, you know, putting himself into danger for the sake of the spectators, where he was hanging off the side of the of the stage that he was on. There was a little pole there, and he's hanging and leaning all the way out so he could see the racers when they came around a corner up near the tennis courts and headed back headed back towards the pits. He could get a little glimpse of them, you know, if he timed it right of where they were a couple minutes into the lap, so he could make that call. But yeah, if you moved that whole area, that whole starting stretch, they have this beautiful sort of mansion building that is right in front of the limestone steps and right next to the you know, tricky off camber and all of the swoopy turns, and a big paved road in front of it. You know, you could move everything that way. You could put the whole venue down at the bottom of that hill and then that 5 minute. The $5 parking that's nowhere near the start line becomes premium parking.
Exactly. I think Stu Thorne was saying the same thing. The entire course could be down in that bowl area there. The other thing problem that would solve is then from the pit, we could actually hear the announcers, which is a really nice thing when you're in the pit, right? Is to be able to hear the announcers, hear the lap count, hear where riders are. So, you know, it just kind of helps you a little bit. As it is now, you couldn't hear anything. It was basically silence over there, except for what people were saying to each other, you know. So I think it would solve that problem too. So I completely agree with you, Bill.
Same thing with trying to cover it as a photographer or shooting video. You know, you want to be at the finish line at the end of a race. You can't hear, you know, thanks to OVCX and also Cyclocross Magazine for the live tweets that we were having to follow the race on our phones to see how many laps were left. And then, you know, usually you want to be there. You want to be able to cover. You want to be able to take your pictures and shoot your video of one lap to go. That's usually when all the moves are making. But for this race, two laps to go, you had to start heading towards the finish, or you weren't going to, or you were going to miss, you know, the winner coming across the line.
Right.
Just to anticipate people's tweets and comments and suggestions to us. Although, yes, we can all count to 6, 7, 8, and 9. Once you're wrapped up in that race, it gets really difficult to keep track of how many laps are down and how many laps are to go. It's
You need a reminder.
Yeah, and if
you're not going to keep lap count at the top of your mind.
I mean, you guys are running around in the pits and having to worry about, you know, especially getting bikes cleaned and doing all that. We're running around, and once you get to a different part of the course, you know, I think I figured out the layout, but I don't know. You know, a lot of times you don't know if they're coming or going. I mean, you want to get different views. Yeah. So you're like, all right, well, there they are now. Are they on the same lap or are they on the next lap? So, yeah, it's easy to lose count. But, okay, are we done? Are we done complaining about the course? Should we talk about the good stuff?
I've got one other thing, and maybe we're going to flip it because it's not complaining. I will say, to their credit, they have openly gone out on the interwebs and said, okay, we had this race. We're willing to listen to your feedback. Let's hear it.
Yeah.
Now let's see if they make the changes as we think they should. That'll come to be seen. But to their credit, they're looking for that feedback.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, you know, and there is stuff that I try to start this out with stuff they did right. They did a great job with things like the pit. Those hydrants they put in, brand new. Those were just installed just for this race. So excellent job there. I think they did a good job of like we said, everyone said the course was fun to ride. I did hear some people say it was really maybe a little bit harder, you know, causing the race to be spread out. And like you said, David, the lap times. But overall, I think people enjoy the course. The other thing, that flyover that they built, that thing was amazing. That was, you know, that thing was built to last. So they did an excellent job with that. No danger of that thing being rickety or, you know, any problems with that at all. So that was all good. And then they kept
a little close to the turn there, I'd say, Scotty. I've heard, I didn't ride it myself. I heard that it came down pretty hard. I know of one
and you had to ISO break
speed
real hard
that got decoupled. But yeah, right at the bottom of that, you have that
big left
hard
turn.
Left turn. Yep, and there are a lot of people in the men's pro race and the women's race that had the tripod around the corner right from the bottom of that.
Yeah. I mean, that was... saving grace that you didn't have to ride up it or else people would have been, like, launching through it. Because, you know, your speed is definitely be slower having to climb upstairs on one half of the flyover instead of riding up it.
Yeah. So, some good stuff too. I don't know if you guys noticed too. They did a really good job of keeping everything looking, like you never saw any ripped up tape or everything was always taped really well. And this, as far as the side tape goes, I'm talking, if it did get knocked down or torn, it was immediately fixed.
Teasing one of the guys doing the tape because I thought it was just amazing. Is that it was, a lap and a half to go at the planks and he's fixing tape in the men's race at the end. I'm like, this is the only race I've ever been to in my life where you're still fixing tape with less than two laps to go at the end of the men's race. There was no advantage gained. It was the outside tape at the barriers. I think just the heavy wind must have dislodged, but it wasn't in the course. It was part of the double tape, but he's just like, that doesn't, it's not squared away. I'm going down there and I'm fixing it. I'm like, man, that's
exactly.
Impressive. But yeah, they had three or four.
So that shows either the level of detail or that this is their first time doing it and they don't realize that they're going to be taking that down in 10 minutes.
I'm going to go with level of detail. I will say.
I'm going to give them that.
Yeah. And I will say that the sections of the course where the technical features were looked beautiful. Just if you looked at this course, it looked great. I love looking, especially this time of year. You know, you cannot get better fall colors with your elite races. They're later in the day, had beautiful light coming down on them. And just these long, swoopy turns on one hillside, just really great feature. I think everybody enjoyed those. And it would come around, and then you'd have this really hard climb up to the pits. And I understand people complaining about it being hard, but it wasn't like it was, this is just dumb. We can't do this. Everybody could ride it. It was wide. You could pass if you're a stronger climber. I think it was a really good technical part of the course that allowed people who have that strength to excel in it. So, had people who have good descending skills. You had this really technical big drop that you had to go down. Yep. That I know that, even in the elite races, some people were grabbing brakes the whole time down there and pretty much skidding down it. And then you had people at the front who were just like, just
bombing
ripping
it
and gripping it. Yeah. So you had limestone steps. Some people could ride them. Some people couldn't. You had a really tricky off camber. The whole technical sections of that course, I give really high grades to. I can see where if they had to have worlds there, you could build a world championship course in that park. Oh. I no problem with it. I mean, as I said, the topography of that course lend itself to have an amazing course. And they did it. They set it up. The stuff that we're complaining about, the parking, the start, the pits, that's all kind of logistical stuff that can be fixed. I think I have a feeling that they are going to fix it. I've already heard conversations. By the time we are there for 2018 National Champions number two, I think we're going to be looking at a completely different setup. So I overall was really impressed with it. I thought it was a great venue. Eva Bandman, as I said, also a great venue. I think they have two in Louisville to choose from.
Probably more than that.
Yeah, probably. I will mention,
I agree
also
with you, Bill, everything.
Yeah, I was just going to say that, coming back to it, there was a local news station that did try to start a controversy that we've all seen, you know, and even from Austin down to your local races that, oh my gosh, look what all these bikes did. They ruined our park. And
it's a permanent mud trail.
Yeah. And I kind of just shrugged at it. It looked like they were just trying to, you know, they did mention there's a permanent cyclocross park here and they want to go ruin one of our other parks. And I don't know. It was kind of a shrug to me, but I know that's getting passed around. I think even if you read the text in the article, they were talking to some guy who runs in that park, and he was like, I'm sure it'll all grow back. You know, so they couldn't even find anybody who was like super outraged about it. And the city was all right. Like, you know, yeah, we know that there's going to be some wear and tear and it'll grow back. So, yeah, I think
heritage trees there or anything we got to worry about.
No, yeah. So.
Hey, I'm going to just throw out here, and I know this is self-promotion, whatever. I still love to do it anyways. Mad Anthony Cyclocross this weekend held on a historic fort from the very early 19th century. They love us when we come to this park. There's never any complaints. They understand that everything's going to grow back. So there are some parks out there that are willing to step up and say, yeah, hey, go to town with it. It'll all grow back.
Yeah. All right, so are we ready to talk about results? Where do we want to start?
We're going
to
talk about results? Like racing?
Did you want to?
I don't know.
Want to start with the Pan Am Champ?
This is cyclocross venue radio.
Let's start with the junior men and work our way up from there, from the bottom of the way it's on the UCI website. So for the junior men in Louisville, first place was Ben Gomez Villafane. Second place, Lane Marr. Third place, Alex Morton. Fourth place, Tyler Clark. Fifth place, Calder Wood. So this is for the Continental Championship. Right? I'm making sure I'm reading the right one. I didn't want to be reading the Derby City results.
Okay.
So did you guys get to watch the juniors at all? I watched part of it.
This is the future of, well, Pan American cyclocross and North American cyclocross, I believe, is strong. Mm-hmm. This was a fun race, and those guys are... Man, they're going to be...
These guys are battling, man.
And they're going to be up there battling. I didn't check the lap times, but they're going to be up there battling with the elites sooner than we know. You know, they're yeah. And we almost had, with our winner, Ben Villafane, whose sister is Argentinian, according to the UCI, and he is American, according to the UCI. You know, we almost had an Argentinian... winner.
We did have
an Argentinian winner. He's just that
and I mean, Lane, Ben, and Alex are all, I mean, they're all right there, and watching them race is really, as is Tyler and Calder, Connor, you know, those guys are all, Sam, you know, Sam Noel, all just great, fun to watch race, and it's just going to be amazing. As those guys move up into U23, it's just going to be great to watch. So I totally agree with you there, Bill. All right, men, U23 is next on the list. First place was Gage Hecht. Second place, Eric Bruner. Third place, Cooper Wilsey. Fourth place, Lance Heidet. Fifth place, Grant Elwood. Spencer Petroff way down in number 10 because, tragically, broken chain. We saw... David and I talked about this last night.
Three, right?
A lot of broken chains.
Yeah, but two.
Did you notice that?
Scott Smith and Spencer at the start. Both of those guys broke them in the start. Basically, they didn't make it to the finish line. You know, starting grid down the finishing stretch. They hadn't passed the finish line yet, and they'd already had to run to the pits.
Broken their chain. Yeah, one of the Jam Fund riders had the same thing happened. Oh, yeah, right. I'm sorry. So, not to take anything away from Gage Hecht, great race by him and Eric Bruner, second place. That was a decent race, I heard. I didn't get to see the whole thing, but, it was awesome. Spencer, not the greatest weekend for the Aspire team.
Oh, no.
As a whole. You know, they did not have a great weekend. They had mechanicals. few little hiccups in the pit.
You wanted to go further than that, Scotty D?
Well, basically on Saturday, Spencer comes into the pit for a bike change and there's no bike. He rides to the end of the pit, gets off his bike, and is standing there with his arm up.
And there was no
air,
mechanic like, there waiting for
like,
him either.
Where, guys, where is everyone? So, you know, that's that was an issue for them. When we get to the elite men's race, we can talk about Powers pulling out. This didn't, you know, this you're gonna have a bad weekend every now and then. So yeah, this was there. So hopefully it won't happen when Nationals rolls around for them or something like that. Yeah.
Get it out of the way now, early.
Get it out of the way now, right?
I will say,
go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, well, a couple things. You know, when we talk about Spencer and Gage, and we'll see this in the women's race, elite race as well, those are two favorites to win the men's elite race on any given weekend in a C1 and C2 race. We've seen Gage Heck just, you know, on Hyde's wheel in Cincinnati. And then also on Saturday at Derby City. So this is a guy who can win at the elite level, is racing in the U23, him and Spencer. We've seen Spencer up there as well. So you're not only, you know, that's what we were looking for. We were looking for the battle between these two guys. These guys have proven it to be two of the best riders in the U.S., period, you know, of any level. They're moving down looking for that U23. Jury's not looking for, that's where they're supposed to be racing. So that's where they're racing for this race. That's the battle that we were looking for. Gage showed that he is right now, and I'm sure Spencer would have been with him a step above the rest of that field. You know, it only took a lap or two and he was off the front and pretty much just on cruise control. I'm sure. Again, we say it. They're going to tell you it's the hardest race. They were worried about everybody behind them, but he didn't look like he was, you know, too concerned about being able to take that win, especially with Spencer out of it. If you look at Spencer, he gave the field, I'd say, about a minute head start.
Right.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he had to run all the way, then up and over the flyover. That was a lot of running.
That he made it back to 10th place was incredible. You know, and we saw it like in the later laps, and he is just like weaving through traffic, you know, and just like steamrolling through there to work his way up. That, you know, regardless, and I know he was upset. I mean, he was visibly upset, just not happy with that at all. I'm sure this was, you know, a goal to have that jersey. It's still a super impressive ride.
I think it's cool because it's going to set up, like you said, Bill, there's between Gage and Spencer, there's a very friendly rivalry there going back. You know, when they were juniors, Spencer won the junior junior Pan Am championship when he was riding for us. And Gage was the top competition that year. And Spencer won that year. So this year, Gage won as the U23. So that's one we're going to see go back and forth for a long time, hopefully. And it's going to be awesome. It's going to be awesome. And I'm sure, knowing Spencer as I do, yes, Bill, I think you're right, too. I think he was very upset with that, yeah. I'm sure. And it's going to be great. I love watching those two race. And it's funny, like you said, Bill, when you took the U23 men out of the elite field, when we were in the pit for the elite race, it was really weird. It was like,
quiet.
Where is everybody?
It completely changes that race. You know, it's like, Hyde and those guys, who are they looking out for? Well, two of the guys are looking out for Gage Heck and Spencer Petrov week in and week out, and they're not there.
They're not there.
It just changes the whole dynamic of that race. Oh, I will also say, as a programming note, we have not forgotten about the women's junior results. There are no women's junior results. We're still waiting for that to happen. We still need to have a junior women's race as well. So the UCI still has some work to do on that front.
Yes. Yeah. Well, next, speaking of results, next in the results is the elite women, then the U23 women. So we'll do the elite women first, just because that's the order they are on the UCI website. First place was Katie Compton. Second place, Katie Keough. Third place, Crystal Farrar Bruneau from Canada, fourth place, Courtney McFadden, fifth place, Becca Fahringer. So what did you guys think? Women's race, Katie Compton kind of just, you know, there was some talk about Keo giving her, putting pressure on her this year, and just didn't really happen. She just kind of rolled away. This is a Katie Compton course, though, wouldn't you say, Bill?
I'd say so, because she's always been able to climb, and this wasn't, you know, we even saw it at Copenberg Cross where she was right on, you know, Helen, we talked about that, Helen Wyman, you know, her tactical move was to get in front of her before the descent, which was just a beautiful move, and that meant that, you know, Katie's advantage was taken away, so she was a little slower on the climbs there. These climbs were, I think, right in her wheelhouse in that they were really hard but not super long, you know, so it was the kind of distance that she can use that power and make an advantage. And for that, those parts of the course, Katie Keough, you know, it has no problem with. So she's on Compton's wheel. That's kind of her strength as well. But you really saw where Compton excels is in the fast technical sections, and then on that downhill drop that we talked about, you know, earlier, where where riders were riding it different. She came through there, and it was just like, I'm sure she just was having fun on it, and she was just flying down that section, picking up time. She was also on the swoopy section picking up time, but this one really came down to a classic cyclocross scenario where, you know, it's one of the reasons that we love cyclocross, especially over road racing. They're coming through one of those technical sections, and Katie Keough has to go foot down. She sort of bobbles, you know, behind, and and Katie Compton hears it. You know, you hear the person stop pedaling. You hear, like, the derailleur, you know, shaking, whatever it is. And she was like, oh, it's go time. And she, you know, as soon as Keough bobbled that little bit, she heard it and she just took off, attacked, you know, put in one really hard attack, got that gap, was able to build on it as Keough was finding her rhythm again. And then that was it. There was your, you know, 5-10 second gap, and that was it. Race was over. And that is where cyclocross gets it right and road racing gets it wrong. I know that's going to be controversial statement, but man, if somebody screws up, if somebody crashes, you know, that's all part of racing, and that's when you take advantage and you go.
Exactly. Totally agree. There was a very pretty big gap, so throughout this field, from, you know, all the way through. And
but you know what, like, Scotty D, I'm gonna stop you there for just a moment, because what are you saying it like that, man? Crystal Farrier Bruneau was racing with those two ladies for a good chunk of it.
She was. Yep.
She was. She was not way off the back. There was a trio for a good chunk of it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's nice to see the Canadian national champion come out and just really go at it.
No, I agree. Especially, you know, in the beginning when the three of them were together, Keough, Compton, and her, and Bruneau. I mean, that was really, really exciting. I mean, I know people in the pit were like, wow, this is going to be good, you know, and she hung with them for a long time. So that was awesome. And seeing her on the podium, that's great, because that does add the true Pan Am feel. Yeah, the Pan Am feel to the race for sure.
And we had, Magli Rochette also up there. I think she finished sixth. But that was, and that was that great, that was probably the most exciting part of the race once Compton pretty much had her gap with a couple laps to go, is that race between Fahringer and Courtney and then Magli for a while was probably the closest group. So those were, and especially Courtney and Becca, they had a really, that was probably the most fun as a spectator to watch that battle, because they were pretty much going at it the whole race. Courtney able to pull away in the end.
Yeah.
And here's one more thing that cyclocross gets right. Even though the race was won by somebody else or two other people pretty clearly up the road, it's still exciting to watch the little races that maintain and that go on within the lower placings.
The battles. Races within the race.
The battles.
Absolutely.
Yep. Pick your battle.
The battle royales.
Yeah.
So overall, a fun race to watch for the women's race, I think. Like you said, if you looked for these smaller battles within it, and Yeah. So anything else you want to say about the women before we move to the U23 women?
I know it's always going to be an issue. I would have loved another lap, maybe 50 minutes. You know, it's just, I always feel like the races are a little too short. I don't think, and this is not anything against the officials or anything like that. It's just the way it sets up. But I always think that I'd love to see a little longer race.
I agree. That would be great. Okay, U23 women. In first place was Emma White. Second place, Clara Hansinger. Third place, Katie Klaus. Fourth place, Emma Schwartz. Fifth place, Ruby West. Emma coming back. Emma goes down on Saturday, cuts her knee. At first, she didn't think it was a big deal. I was hearing, and then people were like, "I think you're gonna need
that thing
like a flap of skin."
Yeah, that was a huge gash. I mean, not a big deal. Yeah,
I think you're gonna need to go get some stitches, which she did. I believe it was 9 stitches in her knee. Comes back and then wins the U23. By 17 seconds. So great race by her. That was good to see. It's her time in that U23 field, I think, for sure. Clara Hansinger, also good race by her. And Emma Schwartz, you know, Emma Schwartz is slowly putting together a good season in the U23.
Yeah.
You know, she was very prevalent in Cincinnati, both races. Comes here, gets a top 5. Just off the podium. So that's good to see, too. And Ruby West rounding out the wide angle podium there from Canada in fifth. So anything that you noticed about that race, Bill? I didn't get to see a lot of this. So I want to mention in 19th place, the last rider on the lead lap, her first U23 race, Lily Peck, former teammate of mine, and it was awesome to see her finish on the lead lap in her first U23. So go ahead, Bill.
Well, a similar situation to what we saw with the U23 men. Emma White finished second in the U.S. Cup CX series overall. So she is and has won, I know, C2 races, has been on the podium of C1 races. This is an elite rider who is racing the U23 race. So again, it does two things. One, assuming she gets a clean race, she's pretty much a favorite going into that one to take the jersey, which she did. What it also does is it removes another factor from that race that we already talked about and didn't mention. No Emma White in there. She's one of the people who would be at the front. You know, one of the racers that we haven't mentioned who was her biggest rival in that field for the past several years. She's a little bit older. I don't know if it's a full year, but it's enough. Is Ellen Noble, who is just out of that U23 category now, racing in the elite. So that is the battle that we have been used to seeing, especially at the national level in that U23 level. So that battle doesn't happen anymore because of that little gap. And then next year, you know, Emma will be up in the elites as well. We didn't mention Ellen Noble. You know, you did mention the Aspire team overall, and again, I don't think it was the result she was looking for in that. Of course, it wasn't in the women's field, but yeah, live to fight another day for her.
Yeah, and like I said, I mean, I think that whole they just had the whole team, just things didn't gel this weekend for them. You know, Ellen, I believe, getting 8th in the elite women's field, and like you said, I'm sure that's not what she wanted, but you know. They'll have a good weekend coming up too, I'm sure.
I will say, since we're talking about Ellen, she has another woman, and this one in the U23 field who is also not dismounting for planks, and that's Ashley Zoner. And these were not 25 centimeter planks that they felt they had to put in for the women in Belgium. We really didn't talk about that, but controversial, and I think a wrong move. But these were right at the max. These were high barriers, and she was able to clean them. And I think it is a skill that is no longer going to be something that is, well, it already isn't, but I think that it's a skill that now women, much like we saw with the men a couple years ago, where it was a novelty and then it became a skill that you had to have to compete at the highest level. I think we're making that transition in the women's field as well. And I think it's pretty spectacular because they have the skills, and I love it that's starting to be part of racing now.
I agree. I think I could kind of hear whispers last weekend and this weekend, a lot of women that are now setting up barriers in their local park or their yard or whatever and practicing them. So I think it's going to, you know, they're getting closer and closer and closer to having it just be a thing that the entire field is doing, just like the
you know,
like the men.
To tell you how high those are, and we'll talk about it.
I was
going to
just point that out.
Yeah, it's Stephen Hyde.
I was just going to point that out. Yep.
Crushed himself on those barriers, not being able to ride them cleanly.
Yeah. Yeah.
He took a pretty good digger there.
Digger?
Yeah, digger.
I like it. All right. Speaking of Stephen Hyde, do you want to move on to the men's race? We haven't even started talking about Europe yet, so we better get rolling. In first place was Stephen Hyde. Second place, Tobin Ortenblad. Third place, Michael Vandenham. Fourth place, Hector Fernando Riveros Paez. In fifth place, Kerry Werner. Hyde, you know, winning by over a minute, a pretty dominant performance. When did he take the lead, Bill? You had more views of the course. 2-3 laps in?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Who was in that front group with him again? This is the one that I'm like,
Ortenblad and Vandenham were with him, yeah.
Oh, okay. So this race, actually, Hyde, I don't think, had the best start. So in the beginning, it was actually really fun. We had Michael Vandenham and Tobin Ortenblad, who were off the front, only by a couple of seconds, but it was pretty sweet. Those guys were pushing the pace and making everybody else chase. And it took about two laps for Hyde to get up there on their wheels. And then Hyde was able to get in front and go away. And the one person who was willing or able to chase him down was Jeremy Powers. So then you had Powers going after Hyde. You know, you had alluded about Powers having to pull out. He's had, I think, this year, something going on with his heart rate that he already, you know, all these racers already have a really high heart rate, but his went up to 220 and stayed there for 5 minutes. And
when he pulled out, so he pulled into the pit lane.
He was
their pit lane was several lanes up from ours, and he pulled in and he kept going. I don't know if he exchanged bikes.
He just rolled.
Okay, he rolled down the pit lane going very slow.
Yeah.
He actually pulled into our pit lane. And he was pointing at his chest, and he's like, "Yeah, my heart rate, you know." And he was talking to Tom. He's like, "Hey, Tom," and he just pointed to his chest, like, "Yeah, heart rate, you know." And then he just was done. So, you know, it's better to be safe than sorry with that for sure.
Yeah, but
that's what he's doing.
I think a little disappointing because he did. You know, I think he played it right in that he had no stake, no skin in the game on Saturday. You know, he wasn't going to be getting any money in the U.S. Cup Series. He went out there, what did he do, like 2-3 laps of that race before pulling out?
Something like that. Yeah.
So not going to burn any matches on Saturday's race, almost a recon race, you know, did that, put that time in. I know Sunday he was the one guy I saw that, between every race, or maybe even during some races, he was testing out every feature on that course. You know, he did that drop, like, I'd say he was in the double digits for practicing that, making sure that he had it dialed in, riding those limestone steps. He was the only guy consistently riding the limestone steps, you know, and that gave him another second advantage there. So I think he was really, this was going to be his race that he I think had something to prove that he was still at that level. And until the heart rate, he was right there. He was showing it. I even talked to Michael Vandenham, and when they were chasing down Hyde, it was him. It was Powers, Vandenham, Tobin, and then Kerry Werner. Powers is, you know, he's the boss, and he's like, hey guys, we got to work here, we got to do this. And Vandenham is basically like, I'm doing everything I can just to hang here. You know, you were pushing the pace high right now that they couldn't even come through. So I think he was on good form, and it was just kind of unfortunate. Hyde, however, is just, oh my gosh, right now he is just a step ahead.
A beast.
You know?
Yeah.
And another guy.
That, I will say that that is where Scotty D had mentioned, look at Power just taking control. He's like a limestone cowboy out there.
Very nice.
I think that's what he said to me.
As this race progressed, though, I think one of the things to watch, one of the most exciting things to watch, was Hyde was off the front by quite a bit. Was the battle between Tobin and Michael Vandenham?
Absolutely.
You know, they were together the entire rest of the race. Tobin ends up getting in by about 10 seconds at the beginning, but they were coming through the pit the last time. I didn't know which one of them was going to have side. I mean, they were together, you know, so Tobin able to put a little bit of time in before the finish line. But I had to ask people who got second, you know, because they were that close coming through the pit the last time.
Yeah,
so
it was.
That was probably the battle of the race right there, in my opinion.
That was a great battle to watch. And it wasn't until really late. And I think that time gap is a bit deceptive. Because by that time, mm-hmm. Tobin wants to make sure that he doesn't get caught. Vandenham knows that there's nobody, you know, too close behind him, and just kind of rolled in. So yeah. I think a lot of that gap just happened in that finishing stretch. But yeah, that was a really fun battle to watch.
And let's talk about Fernando in fourth place. You know, he was being supported by the Stans No Tube guy. Got to meet Jake Wells this weekend. Finally, he was in the pit. That was awesome. He was helping out pit for Fernando with Drew there. And that guy had a great couple of weekends. He had a strong performances in Cincinnati, comes to Louisville, also has strong performances from Columbia, and just great to see him up there in the top five. So props to that. Yes.
Yeah. <I'm...
laughs> I was going to let David talk for a while. I've been talking too much.
Well, I try to sneak in every now and then. But yeah, Fernando is having a great day out there. It was kind of the excitement. And it's nice to see, again, making it a Pan Am kind of race, that it's good to see non-Americans, yes, make America cross again. Yes, I know they're Americans, but the non-traditional USA racers out there really doing themselves proud. It was a great race by all means.
Yeah. And a Canadian on each of the elite podiums.
Yeah. That's great. That's awesome.
Our neighbors to the north. Or to our east, actually, Scotty D.
Yeah, right. All right. Is there anything else we want to talk about the Louisville, the Pan American Championships? Anything at all?
I'm sure there's stuff we forgot, but I think we covered it pretty thoroughly.
I think we've covered it. Let's move on to the European Championships, shall we?
Yes.
We shall.
All right. We'll start with the junior men in European. Did you guys get to watch any of this?
I did not.
I saw some highlights.
We tried to.
Yeah. So David and I tried to watch, I think it was the U23 women. We found a stream, and it was a guy. It looked like a guy with his video camera pointed at a television.
Oh, fantastic.
And then he was commentating.
Because there was no audio feed on it.
Yeah, so he's commentating as he's watching this, and then he's streaming it to the rest of the internet.
And we really, really appreciated that he wanted to fill that dead air space.
But it was hard to watch.
It was hard. And I'm sorry. If you listen to our show, we love you. Thank you so much for the hard work you were doing and for the effort. We do appreciate that.
Yeah. All right, well, let's do the junior men. Do I have the right thing? Yeah, junior man. First place was Loris Rulair. Second place, Thomas Kopecky. Third place, Ben Tullett. Fourth place, Ryan Camp. Fifth place, Pim Ronhar. I'm sure I mangled that. So that's that. Anything anybody wants to say about that? Ben Tullett, in the third place there. That's nice.
Oh, yeah.
Anything else?
Yes. Well, a couple things. Hang on. Thank you for mentioning Tullet. We received our a feedback email from our friends even farther east, over across the pond. Tullets. I think I screwed up the Tullets last time when we were talking about the Turner and Pidcock and all the results there. This is a nice letter here from Steven, who said, sorry to nitpick, but I think you rolled the Tullet brothers together during the last TDD TIE. Ben is the younger and junior Copenberg winner, and Dan is the elder who got silver at last season's Junior Worlds. So thank you, Steve, for setting me straight
Bill,
there.
Now you've made a mistake. Yeah, no, we don't. That's not nitpick at all. That's
no,
I'm
that's
glad
awesome.
That was clear.
I'm glad that. Yeah. All right.
Thanks for keeping us honest.
Yes. The thing that I do not know, which I guess we should, Czech Republic, Tabor, that's where this race was, 2015 World Championship. Not sure if this is the same course. I'm going to assume it is. Much different conditions. This looked really dry and really grassy and really fast. And that was, you know, that race was a mess. If you remember, that was the one where everybody had the wrong tires.
Right. Almost everyone.
Yes, almost everyone. And so venue wise, you know, a place that has had a world championship, it looked beautiful. I mean, the way they set it up, it was just like swooping all over the place. It looked like a cool course, but it didn't cool. It looked like lots of grass.
Yeah, I've only seen tiny little bit. So, all right, men, U23, let's move on. First place, Eli Easerby. I'm going to stick with the Eli Easerby pronunciation. I like that one. In second place, Thomas Pidcock. That was the battle kind of everyone was talking about. The results, did that come down to a sprint? Because the result time is exactly the same. Yeah. In third place, Seaman Wouters. Fourth place, Joshua Dubau. However, that's a French name, so I'm sure I mangled that. And in fifth place, friend of the pod, Jens Dekker.
Yeah.
Easerbeat. Go ahead, Bill.
No, I was going to say, yeah, Easerbeat and Pidcock, definitely the battle there. I think that it not only came down to a sprint, but there was a protest from the sprint in that Pidcock.
Oh, irregular line choice. Yep. Irregular line.
Yeah. I did hear about that. That's right.
So little drifting on Ellie's part into the barrier that pushed Pidcock off his line, I think, in his retelling of it, you know, he had to check up a little bit. They protested, but that was not upheld, and Ellie was able to keep the victory. I will say also that a friend of the podcast, Jens Dekker, did put out there not really the race he was looking for. He's a guy that we've seen winning races this year in that group, which is really great because that's a really competitive field this year with both Pidcock and Easerbeat. But, you know, one of those days for him. But he was, we'll live to race another day.
That's right. So, all right, let's move on to the women's U23 race. In first place, Chiara Chiocci from Italy. So awesome to see that. Second place, Laura Verdanchat. Third place, Nicola Noskova from the Czech Republic. In fourth place, Celine Del Carmen Alvarado from the Netherlands. I'm sure I mangled it. And in fifth place, Yara Castellin. From the Netherlands. So Verdanchat, if you'd asked me beforehand, I would have said she's the favorite going in. You know, I've seen her before. She was competitive in this race last year. I'm still getting second place. Nothing, you know. But
and
nice
with the
see...
same time again, too. So she was right there. Yeah. That's another photo finish, photo-esque finish.
Nice to see a name that we haven't heard a lot of before from Italy coming in there and getting that win. So, Bill, any comments on that one, too?
Just about the Italian women are starting to really come to the front in all levels from this race and then up into the elite. So that's pretty cool that's growing into another cyclocross hotbed.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's going to be awesome. I'd love to see them get more. I mean, Arzufi and the elite women too. It's coming on, like you said. We've been seeing her a lot. And after that terrible, the terrible visuals we have of her at Worlds. At Worlds with the blood on her face, it's just cool to see her coming back. So, all right, in the Elite Women, first place was Sonia Kant, second place Lucinda Brand, third place Alice Maria Arzufi, fourth place Anne Marie Vorst, and in fifth place Maud Kapteins. We saw Mark in the parking lot at Louisville, and went up and David Starrs were like giving him having fun with him about that. So that was hysterical. So, but yeah, so Sonia Kant, again, you know, like you're saying, Bill, I think the Belgian national championship is really on her radar too. But a good, you know, this is a good win too for her. Nice to see her get a win like this, and hopefully things will start to roll for her now. Have anybody heard about her GI issue? Is that resolved?
I don't know. I think it was good. Who knows? But I think it was probably good for her and good for all of us as fans to see her healthy for this race and up there at the top. So.
And hopefully healthy going forward. This is hopefully behind her now.
Yeah.
So also Anne Marie Vorst, we're seeing her. We're seeing her in the top five in a lot of races. So it's good to see the former U23 world champion up there and battling with the elite women. So.
And the former world champion overall that was, I don't know, can we call Lucinda Brand sort of a flash in the pan here, and then you know, showing up again and still having that form.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
and similar to a couple of other races, same finishing time, so that again shows the parity amongst these racers.
Yeah, true. All right, let's move on to the elite men. Unless you guys have something else you want to mention for the elite men, first place.
Who did it? Who won?
Any prediction? Matthew Vanderpoel, of course, in first place. Second place, Lars Vandehaar. Third place, Tone Aerts. Fourth place, Michael Vanthernout. Fifth place, David Vanderpoel. David Vanderpoel, the brother battle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sort of.
So, yeah, I mean, this is pretty similar to what we predicted. But the big thing is what name is missing from this finishing list? I don't see it anywhere down there. Bill, tell us about this.
Yeah. Sven Nys.
Sven did not race in a surprise. This was the one he wanted, this European. You know, that is something actually to mention. I don't know if he ever raced one. Remember when they didn't have a men's elite race? For years.
Oh, you're right. For European, right?
Because the one that at least I always remember, and I'm sure you guys too, was that huge battle between Mathieu van der Poel and the guy we're going to mention, Wout van Aert, when they were both U23s that hugely muddy race. Wout didn't show up. Decided to skip the race. Instead, he went to Tuscany and trained and was just kind of hanging out and taking some time away from the media asking him why he isn't winning races anymore and the pressures of just cycling in general. And I think just trying to regroup and come back stronger for the rest of the season. A couple factors out there that have come up, especially in the Belgian press, which you can imagine this is a hot topic for them. A little bit of a sickness in I think even September, he was sick for most of September. That may have led to a poor performance. Of course, everybody's going to blame travel to the U.S. if you're in Belgium. So that's another factor that they are throwing out there for Wout's performance. And then I think the biggest one, and one that probably holds the most weight, he wants to be a road racer. And he had a big road season and is having big training blocks for racing on the road. You know, if it's the classics that he is aiming for, that's April. That's, you know, that's not too far away. So it's really, he's taken on a lot. and he's trying trying to accomplish a lot, and his performance in these cyclocross races may be the result of that. Obviously, you know, before, as I was always saying, well, you know, you look at last year compared to this year, Vanderpool wasn't even racing, but obviously it's more than that now, and it's something that they are trying to figure out. You know, even Niels Albert is like, well, if we knew what the problem was, we'd have fixed it by now. We don't know what's, you know, why his performance isn't where it should be for his talent.
Yeah.
And to his credit, I mean, he could have showed up at the line and struggled through, and he would have been, you know, top five likely. But to his credit, he recognizes something going on that he's got to solve. And he's going to sit this one out and solve it.
Yeah,
I agree. I don't think this is the worst strategy for him at all, is to take a break. You know,
especially as we said, chill. It's not skipping the Belgian national championship. It's skipping Europeans, which, again, you know, I'm sure, as I said, I think the UCI wants to change that, where it stands in people's heads and hearts. But we're not there yet.
No, and if you know, and if you're him and you need a break, where are you going to take it, right? I mean, every race is important. All these series are important, and so, you know, this is, you know, he's not dissing any one of the big series by missing one of their races. This is the Continental Championship.
Well,
so no series is getting the shaft. So it's a good time to do it.
He also has contracts with those series. You know, it's even a business decision. There's no, he's not getting any start money. He's not getting any, you know, sponsor pressure. He's not getting any series pressure, or even, you know, contractually obligated to show up at the start line for this race.
Right. So yeah, not the worst thing in the world, I think. And who knows? I mean, if we see a better and stronger Wout Van Aert the rest of the season, then it was obviously a good call. So we'll see what happens. So.
And not just for him, but also for racing in general. I think that it's good to see a competitive field out there.
Absolutely. So, all right, guys, as a whole, we had our Continental Championship weekend. Any other comments or anything anybody wants to throw in here to wrap this up?
Still waiting on that Oceanic Championship someday.
Someday. Yeah. It'll be here. Okay, so upcoming, we've got this weekend in the U.S., we've got the Northampton International this weekend on the 11th and 12th. We've got Tulsa on the 12th, right? And then we got the Super Prestige and Guevara. That's the only C1 this weekend. So you guys know there's only one more C1 in the U.S. this season.
That's Ruts and Guts
on December 2nd. Yeah. It's already almost over.
Yeah. There's some question. Crazy, I know there was some question out there on the internet about CXLA. That is happening. That is going to be a C2. I will also mention that, you know, we're going to we're going to have to get into this again. We have some competition with that NoHo race and with Hirtland, Tulsa Tough, kind of coming out on the low end of this. You know, it's the registration
numbers
really, really, really low. And I think they get hurt a little bit by being just a one day. You know, it's traveling to Oklahoma and just traveling for one day for a C2 is a tough ask for, I think, your biggest racers in the country and in the continent.
We'll see what happens.
Speaking of, so there are, you know, if you look at the list, you can see, and we always talk about it, and I know that it's a bit of a pejorative to say point hunting, but what I did want to point out as far as point hunting was that along with the European Championships, there was a C2 race in Spain. And if you look at the results of that, like second in the men's field, second through maybe 20th were all Spanish riders with maybe one French guy thrown in there. And then the winner was Vincent Vanstjaines. So Vinny traveling for some points.
Points hunter. Yeah. So, and like we said, they the Belgians even say that about other Belgians that come here to race,
right?
That they're points hunting here in the U.S. So we see that everywhere where people think that that's going on. So,
you know,
whatever.
What? It's strategy. It is strategy. I don't, you know, we look down upon it, I guess, or some people look down upon it. I think it's just a good strategy. You need points.
I don't look down on it.
Go find them.
Yeah, if there's if there's a UCI race, you know, and you're also supporting that race, and they need people.
That
riding,
race is there. Yep. That race is there, and anyone can go to it. Right. Yep. So it's not restricted. No one has any advantage that no other rider has. So I agree. Complete strategy, and I got no problem with it. So, anyways, all right, guys. Anything else we want to talk about? Are we ready to wrap this up? David, if people want to get in touch with you, where's the best way to do it?
I am on Instagram and Twitter at
Mr. David Padden. And Bill,
where are you at? Twitter and Instagram at CX Hairs. The biggest thing I just want to push out there right now as a compliment to Crosshairs Radio, I have now started Crosshairs Television, which is...
What?
Yeah, so your Sven Ness type videos with video and then some slates of text in there to give commentary and context to the race. I started this in Cincinnati, have four races with the women's and men's elites from the weekend in Cincy, and then followed it up also with men's and women's from the Pan Ams this weekend. We're still going to see if I have enough coverage to do other Pan Am races, and may even go back and try to do Charm City as well, just as sort of a throwback race. But it's been a lot of fun to try to take this old Sven Ness approach and turn it towards U.S. cycling. And it's fun for me because it's my own footage I'm using. It's also, you know, music that I have the rights to. So it's the kind of stuff that if you're out there and you want to sponsor a cyclocross video series, I can now say yes to that. Whereas Sven Ness, I never could because I didn't have the rights to that stuff. So
now you just got to come up with a name.
Crosshairs Television. That's it.
No, but I mean Sven Ness-esque video.
Nope. Nope. That was just to explain it, but no, I'm okay. done with the rider names. So you don't send me your
Crosshairs.
You need to have a Sane coolest rider ever-esque. No, we're not. No. Not doing it. Thank you.
I think that's
a
wise choice on your part.
Thank you for your submissions.
Yeah.
but the category is closed.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, that, and if you want
to Scotty Deep stepping on you. Which cable television networks is carrying that now?
None
yet? Yeah. Oh, come on.
All right. Well, that's
I was
awesome
gonna say
if you want to
contact this show, you can always get in touch with me at feedback@cxhairs.com. Also, be like Paul and start the conversation for us here by leaving a voicemail at 405-CX-HAIRS.
All right. And as always, you can contact me, Scott Diedenbach, at CyclocrossNet on Twitter or at BikeShopCX also on Twitter. And you can send questions or whatever to our tech show, BikeShopShow@gmail.com. All right, guys.
It's
I think
not called
this
the BikeShop Show.
I know.
Not anymore.
But that's the
BikeShopCX.
But that's still the email.
You need a new email address.
That's hard to
I want
change.
Branding,
though, I don't
branding
want to change
across
it.
The line. Okay. I understand.
I know. So, you just totally like got me.
I know. I'm sorry. I screwed up your rhythm.
All right, guys. I think we're done.
Yeah. Time for more coffee.
All right.
Okay.
Talk to you later.
Later.